Hey, this is Mike Evans. Listen to every episode of Schlereth and Evans on demand at 1043thefan.com. Presented by Siltahara Motors, the home of the zero down with Chapter 7 and 13 bankruptcies. Regardless of your financial standing, no one should be without a vehicle. Visit the special financing section at sthmotors.com.
Go to 1043thefan.com and subscribe to The Fan Daily for the latest columns, blogs, news, videos, and more sent directly to your inbox every weekday morning.
Happy Wednesday, everybody.
Beautiful morning out there. And I know it's a frosty morning, frigid morning. God, February's been a rough month.
It's been like real winter.
Yeah, real winter.
It's
supposed to be nice today, but the wind the last 2 days.
I just kind of hunkered down. I try to stay in the house as much as possible. I'm not a wind guy.
I don't like the wind.
No, I don't.
The wind puts me on edge.
The wind is windy.
You know?
Have you noticed how windy the wind is?
Oh my goodness, very windy. I find myself like
gritting. It's science.
I grip my teeth a lot when the wind is really howling. It's just like, you know?
You ever go out in the wind and then all of a sudden your teeth get like cold and numb? Your teeth get like, I don't like that.
Never thought about that.
Yeah, I don't like really being cold.
No. I don't mind cold. Like just pure cold. You can make it as pure cold as you want.
Oh, yeah.
When you start to inject the wind.
Right.
Don't like the wind.
See, I'm with you on that because you can go out and shovel in the cold. You feel good.
Like
you're getting,
clear.
Yeah, I'm getting some exercise.
It's invigorating.
Then it gets really cold and you throw the snow. You're shoveling the snow. You throw it and some of it blows back in your face.
So cold.
Yeah.
So cold.
Very
so,
windy.
Anyway, supposed to get up to 41.
Oh, balmy.
That is nice.
Balmy.
That's nice. I'll take that. 55 by Friday. So it's all coming. Right. Hopefully it's coming. Spring hopefully is coming. Garrett Bowles. So John Elway came out yesterday.
I put all my arms and legs into and let him trust.
And said, no, you got to play it.
Ben can't help himself.
That's okay. That's okay, Ben.
Loves that sound.
That's okay. That the Broncos, John said that the Broncos will wait until after the draft to decide on whether or not to pick up the fifth-year option on Garrett Bowles. He's getting ready to go into year four. To pick up the fifth-year option means it's only guaranteed for injury. So you can still pick up the fifth-year option.
And cut him.
And still cut him.
Mm-hmm.
But if he's hurt, then you got to pay him.
Right.
I heard Tyler Palumbis yesterday saying, hey, what's the harm? What's the harm in picking up the option? Because you can still cut him.
Right.
And, you know, you can sort of roll the dice on, you know, whether or not he ends up being hurt. And you have to pay it. I heard Brandon Stokely say that
I am hotter than a red pepper.
He actually felt that Garrett Bowles was playing better by the end of the year. We just had Cecil Lammy on. Saying that, sorry, folks, the Broncos seem to have a higher opinion of their offensive line than a lot of us do. Let's start with Bowlesy. Nobody has been more critical of Garrett than you have. Has he gotten better? Did he get better? And do you see the potential for him to actually be an above average left tackle in this league?
Did he get better? I think he did get better. I saw some better sets. I saw him change for the first time in his career, change a few sets. And, you know, when you talk about pass sets, Mike, you have to be, to really block guys. And this is why I always say offensive line is the most skilled position in football. By far. Tell me one other sport. Where like athletes don't match up against one another and you're still expected to perform. So you're a like athlete in that, you know, you're 6'5 and the guy you're playing against is 6'5 and you're both 300 pounds, right? Or whatever. But the guy across from you is exponentially a better athlete than you. Almost on every occasion, he's a better athlete than you. And you're expected to block him 65 straight times without him getting a sniff. And if he gets a sniff, guess what? He goes to the Pro Bowl and you're some schlub that needs to get better, right? That's the game that we play up front. So I'm at a disadvantage as an offensive lineman because I'm a lesser athlete than the guy I have to block, but I have to block him every time. So you tell me the skill and the technique you have to perfect. So for the first time, in his career at the end of last season, I saw Garrett Bowles actually do some things technically that were better. Changing sets. Like, you need to understand, hey man, if I've got, for instance, one of the routes that we throw all the time is all goes, right? Something all go, right? Halfback burst, whatever you got, you know, Z drive, all go Z drive, whatever it is, right? But I know in my mind, I hear all go. I know that's a 5-step drop with a quick throw because receivers can outrun the quarterback's arm. So you're expecting to get some man coverage. You're expecting to get three where you got man on the outside and you say, all go, man. I'm going to take my chances on the outside, right? I got 1-on-1 out there with Rod Smith or Eddie McCaffrey or Cortland Sutton or whoever else we have, right? So I'm going to throw that ball. So now I've got a 5-step drop that I know the ball's coming out quick. Well, guess what? Here I can change my set. Here's an opportunity for me to take the fight to a defensive lineman and let him go, well, wait a minute. He just upkicked me on a throw. Wait, like I'm getting a misread. So now all of a sudden I'm starting to run. I'm starting to defend the run and that quarterback just let it go and I didn't even get into my pass rush. Like those are the things in the mental game that you have to understand. You've got to understand what the depth of the quarterback is. You've got to understand the timing of the route and the route combination. You've got to understand all these things and then you've got to adjust and act accordingly.
All right. So he's gotten better at that.
So he did get a little bit better last year. He changed some things, but
now answer the second part of my question.
Well, wait, let me just finish because here's the problem. You get into the Drew Lock era here. And one of the things the Broncos did, and very smart, of Rich Scangarello, Wrinkles, who's no longer here, man, they got into base-heavy personnel a majority of the plays. Now, some of it was because that's what their personnel dictated. But the other part of that, of doing that, Mike, why do you get into two tight end formations with a back? Because you dictate to the defense what they can play. You get into those formations and you say, hey man, you better bring a safety down here or otherwise you're going to run it down your throat, right? So you bring a safety down here. There's only two things you can play. So pre-snap, your quarterback as a young quarterback doesn't have to read anything. You know, you're getting single high. You know, you're getting one-on-ones on the outside. Cover three is a one-on-one on the outside. It becomes man on the outside if you run verticals, right? Cover one is man across the board with a free safety in the middle. So the bottom line is what you've done is you've eliminated your quarterback's opportunity to think. He doesn't have, well, let's take that away from him because he's young and he's just getting his first opportunities. And when you condense like that, guess what happens? You got help. Your defensive ends, you know what? They can't get out wide anymore. Now they're captured. They've got to go through a tight end before you get a pass rush against them. So some of what they did when Garrett Bowles got better was based on formation and personnel. So yeah, he got better, but part of it was he got better because of the system they were running. Now all of a sudden you got a new coordinator that says, hey, I want to spread it out. I want to get three wides on a majority of the time and I want to spread my tight end out. I want to get him open and, open being away from the formation. And guess what? We got 5 1-on-1s with a back going one way or the other.
All right. So are you confident?
I'm not confident that can he become, that's what we're looking for? Hey, for him to become average because he's below average? If we can just get average, that's good enough for us for a first round pick. Average is, hey, if we could just get average, let's just drop down on penitent knee and pray for average.
Right, so then what I'm hearing is it's very simple. That the reason why John is kicking the can down the road is because his plan or what his plan should be, according to you, is they better go out and find themselves left tackle.
He'll just be another statistic.
And if they go find themselves at left tackle, free agency, the draft, then they don't pick up the option on Garrett Bowles.
The point is being this. Do you think Garrett Bowles, the last first-round pick in this organization to get a second contract, Von Miller, you think Garrett Bowles is going to be the next first-round pick to get a second contract? No way. Zero chance.
I agree with that, but very quickly, do you think he sees a fifth year here?
He may, yeah, because you know what? There's so many other holes to fill. Again, you know, Officer Mayo, you got nowhere else to go.
Coming up, Vic Fangio saying all the right things, everything we want to hear, but in reality, can it happen? Tell you what it is next.
Hey, it's Mike Evans. Siltahar Motors understands sometimes bad things happen to good people. That includes bankruptcy. If that is you, you can still purchase a car at Siltahar with zero money down in almost all cases. This is a program they've been doing for 25 years. The dealership itself is almost 60. Family-owned business that is proud of their reputation and proud to be a huge part of the Broomfield community. If you file bankruptcy, Siltahar Motors can help. Zero down and no payments for 45 days in almost all cases. Contact Team Zero Down at 720-446-9222 or online at sthmotors.com.
I'd like to see us be a little more aggressive, obviously. Does that mean we're going to go crazy? No, probably not. But the simple answer to that wide-ranging question is yes.
What Bronco fan doesn't love the idea of, all right, we're going to be more aggressive. We've got our young gunslinging quarterback. We have the chance in a wide receiver deep draft to go out and really, you know, add speed and throw the ball down the field and go out and have three wide receivers out there every play. That's what Pat Shurmur wants to do. It all sounds great. But I'm sitting next to a guy who is all about the offensive line. It's why I keep coming back to the Garrett Bowles question and why I need a definitive answer on where they're at with this guy and what he's capable of doing. Because when you're trying to build a football team, the areas that you have to find answers to, if you really want to be elite, you better have the quarterback. You better have a very good pass rusher.
Right.
You better have either a shutdown corner or a real good playmaking safety. And you got to have the left tackle.
Yeah.
And I would say if I'm prioritizing, really trying to build my team the right way, it would go quarterback, left tackle.
Right.
So this is why this is such a huge issue for me, and I need a definitive answer from you, because being aggressive and throwing the ball down the field sounds great, but what if they don't have the left tackle to do it?
Right.
Because if they don't have the left tackle to do it, and that's where I'm going to press you on getting a definitive answer here, is then what they do at number 15 becomes crystal clear. And you know what? If they think that the guy that they really feel can be their franchise left tackle isn't going to be there at 15, you better move up to get him.
Especially with the capital you have.
Right?
In my mind, there's no question. But here's the deal, Mike. Like, you're talking about cornerstone positions, which I would call cornerstone positions. And historically, it's been your left tackle, your quarterback, your pass rusher, and your corner. Those are the cornerstone, to me, positions. A lot of people might put a big time number one X receiver type of guy in there. Yeah, that's where I meant with that too. It's nice. But the cornerstone where you have to be strong, like, you know, you talk about building a foundation, like building a home, you know, and the Bible always talks about build your home on a solid foundation, build it on the rock, not on sand where it may sink, right? And the wind and the waves may cast it away. You have to build your franchise with the cornerstones firmly entrenched, meaning your tackle, your corner, your pass rusher, and your quarterback, right? Now, more than ever, you probably need to have a right tackle as well as a left tackle, because look at the division that we play in the AFC West. And yes, I said we, because I have a turd in my pocket. The Broncos playing, okay? Joey Bosa, Melvin Ingram, you pick your poison there. They both are great pass rushers. Hey, Bradley Chubb and Von Miller, right? I mean, they can rush the edge. So you look at, hey, now with Max Crosby in Oakland and Furl, I mean, they can rush the edge. And so you got to have both tackles. Now, here's how you get more explosive. You know, Vic Fangio talking about more explosive. Like, look at the two teams in the Super Bowl. If you look at them, and I don't have the stats in front of me, but I guarantee you there's probably very few teams. I guarantee they were both in the top 5 or 10 in explosive plays, meaning 20-plus yard plays, right? 20-plus yard, usually an explosive is defined as a 20-plus yard pass play and a 10 to 12 yard-plus run. Depends. Each organization is a little different. Some of them give them 10, some give them 12. But let's just call it explosive plays, both run and pass. I guarantee you San Francisco and Kansas City were both in the very top of the league. They were elite. doing it two exceptionally different ways. One, off of play design, off of showing you one thing and doing something else, off of deception, off of showing you their run game, looking at your run game, you have to defend the run game, and having an adjunct play action that looks identical to it. And now all of a sudden I got George Kittle running down. Well, Ben just gave it to me. Chiefs were number two in explosive plays. The 49ers were number three. Bucks were number one. Okay. So you look at that. There's two distinct different ways. You can do it through play design like the San Francisco 49ers did, right? With explosive plays, you can create those explosive plays, or you can do it because your O-line can hold up. Right? And that's the way Chiefs do it. Chiefs say, hey, we're going to get out 4 or 5, and hey, guys, you got to hold up. And if we can hold up for 3.5 seconds, guess what? You can't cover our speed for 3.5 seconds. Two distinctly different ways. Now, I'm not saying that Andy Reid can't create plays, and he's a great play caller and he's a great play designer. So yeah, they have some of that in their offense as well with all the jet sweep stuff and all the, you know, the single back stuff that they do. But the bottom line is they really rely on athleticism and speed.
So interesting enough, the Broncos were 10th in explosive plays. So how'd they do it? If the offensive line isn't that good, how'd they do it?
Well,
play design?
Well, yeah, play design.
So our man Wrinkles actually did a pretty good job.
Yeah, I mean, I'm surprised at 10th, right? I'm surprised by that. So obviously between some runs and the problem, yeah, that is interesting. The problem with them is they had those explosives, but between those explosives, they had a lot of, you know, 4-inch plays.
Yes.
Four-inch in a cloud of dust.
They were the 4-inch offense at one point.
Right.
This texter, who clearly is just trying to get under your skin, but I love it. Mark, Pro Football Focus disagrees with you. Garrett Bowles' Pro Football Focus number way better than you're saying. He was the Broncos' highest-rated blocker.
Again, Pro Football Focus, guys, and they do... they do a lot of great work, right? They do a lot of great work. There's no question. They'll get on and they'll tell you, hey, every NFL team subscribes to our platform. Well, yeah. Every team. It's not like they're reading your stuff. Why do they subscribe to Pro Football Focus, Mike? Do you know why?
I honestly don't, because you basically trash them at every turn.
Well, I don't trash them because they work.
Trash is a strong word.
Yeah.
You.
I disagree with a lot of their ratings.
Yeah, you kind of delegitimize them a little bit.
Right. Yeah. As does every coach in the league.
Right.
Why does every NFL team subscribe to them? Because they do the work for you. Do I want one of my or six of my interns or whatever breaking down every play and organizing it from first down to second down to third downs to, you know, third and sevens for when their organization does it all for you? Give me three wides, 3-by-1, give me 2-by-2 formations, give me whatever. Like, it's all broken down. They do it. That's that Exos Thundercloud I have. That's who breaks it down. So when I plug in, I want to see every 3-by-1 formation run last Sunday. It's there. Boom. They do that.
So they put it all there.
They put it all
their
there.
Findings.
Right.
The NFL teams don't agree with
their findings because they're grading a guy without the game plan. They're grading a guy that they don't know what the assignment is. They're grading a guy. They don't know. So yeah, everybody subscribes to him because you can easily see anybody. You don't have to know football to know, hey, this is a 3-by-1 formation. There's three guys on one side of the ball. There's one guy on the other. That's kindergarten stuff, right? We know that. That doesn't take offensive genius or defensive genius. We can see that. So yeah, take those grades with a grain of salt because you're grading something that you don't have any context for.
Coming up in 4-Down territory, did John Elway finally do what we've all been hoping he would do for the last couple of months? That's next.
Professional football in America is a special game.
This is Four Down Territory.
I'd like to start out with a thank you to John Elway.
That just happened.
All right, now, I'll kill a snitch. I'm not saying I have. I'm not saying I have.
How much you want to make a bet I can throw a football over the mountain?
On Sports Radio 104.3, The Fan.
Gentlemen, this is the real thing. This is what you've been trained for.
First down.
I don't. It doesn't have to be veteran. You know, we just want to make sure we have a capable backup behind him. And, you know, Allen may be that guy. You know, Rip may be that guy. And we'll look and see what else is out there. But I don't think it has to be veteran. You know, Rip and Allen were great guys for Drew when he took over and for him to be in those meetings beside them.
Does it make you feel good?
Huh? Does it sound like...
You know what it sounds
does
like
it
to
sound
me?
Like Brandon Allen might be coming back?
Sounds to me like there's an organizational mandate that we're not going to go out and spend money on a veteran quarterback. So, hey, you two guys, you better be good. Be ready. Remember now, Brandon Allen was a gamer. According to Vic Fangio. Gamer. Never said that about Locke. I know that you believe in the middle of your June quarterback. I do. But let's face it, if your starting quarterback goes down for any extended amount of time, your season's in serious peril, okay? So does that backup quarterback offer so much in the way of being a mentor, that it is better to have that kind of guy who you never really want him to play versus being able to develop a young quarterback and always be feeling like we're in the quarterback development business and that will serve us better in the long run?
Well, you can still have a young quarterback on your roster in that role as the developmental guy. But I would say that Drew Brees went down for five games and the Saints were 5-0 with Teddy Bridgewater in his stead. So I just believe in the value of a veteran guy.
And you saw it firsthand when you were here with Bubby Brister filling in for John that one year. Yeah, what was it, six games?
Seven.
Seven?
You won, he went 6-0, but he played the majority of a game in the seventh game. So it's really 7-0. And, oh, by the way, like... Those to me are, it's invaluable.
What do you think you guys would have gone in those six games if Brian Griese had been asked to play?
I still think we would have been good, but I don't think we'd have gone 7-0.
5-2?
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. I mean, we were that good a team, but the point is this, is that all players resonate to the information that is given to them by veteran guys who have been there and done that. There's a different way to explain things. There's a different connection. There's a different language spoken from guys who have actually done it. And there's value in that. And how much is that value? Is it $4 million, $5 million a year? Yeah, I think so. I think it is. But you're developing a young quarterback. Why would you not want to have somebody who's been through all the pitfalls, who's had the game where he got crushed, help work that guy through those scenarios?
Speaking of that young quarterback to mentor, next in Four Down Territory.
Second down.
Well, we're thrilled the way that, you know, Drew finished. You know, finished 4-1, and I think that where we sit right now, there's no question Drew is, the guy that we're looking to. And so, obviously, we want to be able to improve as a football team, get him some weapons on the offensive side, but also do some things on the defensive side. So, you know, from this point on, we'll start developing that plan and get better on both sides.
No doubt the most definitive endorsement of Drew Locke from mm-hmm. John Elway since the season ended. Were you relieved to hear it?
Yeah, I am, because that's one, you know, obviously that's one position where I don't think they have to waste time evaluating. And waste time is probably the wrong kind of verbiage. They don't have to spend a lot of time. Like, you still want to go look into the quarterbacks that are going to fall and where they may fall. And do you have somebody that's viable there? But you don't have to start you know, grinding through tape on Burrow or Tua or, you know, whoever else is going to get elevated in the first round that doesn't belong there. Herbert or, you know, or Eason or whoever else the other quarterbacks are. Like, I don't think you have to spend a lot of time evaluating those guys. You do a cursory evaluation on all those guys in case somebody, you know, dips into the third round and you're like, man, that's too good a value to pass up. But you don't have to spend a lot of time there. Now, you got to spend a lot of time everywhere else because, you know, there's holes all over your roster, but not there.
Next on four down territory.
Down. Cousins goes out of the shotgun. Amir Abdullah by his side. Green Bay rushes four. Fade to the end zone. Diggs! And he caught it! Yes, he did! Touchdown, Vikings!
Vikings radio. General Manager Rick Spielman trying to quash speculation that the Vikings are looking to trade my man Stephon Diggs. Said, quote, there's no reason to anticipate he is not going to be a Minnesota Viking. Tell me this does not put an end to my dream of the Broncos trading for Stephon Diggs. Does it? Or is he simply trying to build trade value?
Listen, the fact that, what do we always say? When these things come out, where there's smoke, there's fire, when he deletes all his Minnesota stuff off his Twitter handle and his social media handles, you know, that's the ultimate in passive aggressiveness. So there's some issues there. Maybe they're trying to work through those issues. Maybe they're trying to, you know, incite a little bit of pre-draft, you know, excitement and hoping to, you know, put some flyers out. I don't know what their process there is, Mike, but I think that for the right price he would be available. Maybe you're just trying to drive the price up. Maybe they've gotten some fourth rounders or whatever. You're trying to get a second rounder for Diggs. I don't know what that. Maybe they're just trying to heal a relationship. I have no idea, but I think he's going to be available. I don't think there's any question.
Next in four down territory.
Fourth down.
Trading back is fraught. It has danger. You know, what happens if you trade back eight spots? You know, we're at four. Let's say we trade back to eight. There's only four players that we like. What if they're all gone? Now what are you going to do? You're going to trade back again? You know, you can trade yourself back on the good players. But to answer your question, you know, we're open.
Ah, number four. Four is open.
Four.
From Dave Gettleman, general manager of the Giants, saying the Giants are open for business when it comes to the idea of trading the fourth pick to the Broncos. Be kicking the tires on that. Trying to move up to number four.
15-4. Well, what would that take you?
That was pretty prohibitive. We did the math to get up to number one, and it was pretty daunting.
Right.
So, yeah, you still have to give up a lot to go up to number four. But what if there was that tackle that you were absolutely convinced could be your guy there for the next 10 years?
Well, wait now. Can you take a tackle at four, but you just can't take a guard that high,
no,
right?
You can't take a guard that high.
Right.
Yes.
You could take a guard. You could take a guard at six, but you can't take him at four or five.
Yes.
Yeah. But a tackle you can take there, right?
Yes. But not a guard.
Okay.
Even if he's Quentin Nelson.
Yeah. Here's the deal. That's just so stupid. Here's the deal. If there is a guy that you think is generational at his position, and you're going to plug and play that guy for the next 12 years, 10 years, and he is just going to be, you know, he's going to be the next, you know, whatever, the next great left tackle. Absolutely.
Without a doubt.
There's no,
it's worth whatever you have to give up.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But if you think, hey, there's no real difference between this guy that we could get at four and this guy that we could get at 9 or 15,
yep,
then you don't do it.
Yeah. No, I agree.
He's got to be Quentin Nelson-esque.
All right, that'll do it for Four Down Territory, our tour around the NFL. Bring that to you each and every morning at 7:30. Coming up next, we go back out to Indy in the Combine with our very own Troy Rank. That's next. Set to head out to Indy to visit with our pal Troy Rank. Got question mark coming up at 8 o'clock. You got a specific question for the big fella. Hit us up on the ramoslaw.com text line at 303-713-1043. Just give it to us hashtag question mark. And we'll move you up to the front of the line. That's coming up at 8 o'clock, right after we talk to our man, Troy Rank, Colorado sportscaster of the year, presented by Tranny Law. Good morning, Troy.
Morning, guys. How are you?
We're doing great. I want to start right off with Vic Fangio's explanation of the receiver position, the depth of the receiver position. Was he saying, hey, you know what, we can wait on getting a receiver and getting a weapon for Drew Lock, and we can get him in the late first, maybe early second, wherever, you know, wherever, whatever we do as we manipulate this draft? Or was he saying, hey, we got to pick at 15, and there's only a couple of exceptional receivers here, and we got to take that guy? How did you read Vic Fangio's kind of statement on receivers?
That he doesn't totally trust them in the first round, that they're unpredictable. I mean, the college offense versus the NFL offense, that's why you lead to some hit and miss in the draft, because the NFL offense is so different than the college offense in terms of the scheme and how plays are relayed. So I asked him, how do you balance chasing one in free agency versus taking one in the first round? And I mean, you could tell that he leans more toward the proven commodity in free agency. They've never, always never taken a receiver in the first round. Now, you could argue Sutton should have gone in the first, but he didn't. And there is this class is as deep as any since 2003. But I do think you have to look at it. And if you can't get an Amari Cooper or a proven receiver in free agency, don't kick that can down the road too far where, well, there'll be a guy late in the second, there'll be a guy early in the third, like a K.J. Hill or Jalen Reagor. I like those guys, but for me, the guy I was most impressed with yesterday at the combine was Henry Ruggs III. He just checks every box in terms of speed, athleticism, played in big games. He could play some special teams if necessary. I walked away from that after interviewing he, Chenal, and CeeDee Lamb, just leaning a little more toward Ruggs because of that speed element. He thinks he's going to break the 40 record. And at Alabama, they had so many mouths to feed. I honestly believe, and I told him this, his best football is in front of him.
Okay, and that sounds fun, and that sounds exciting, and it certainly goes with Vic Fangio saying we're going to be more aggressive. It goes with Pat Shurmur and his belief in wanting to throw the football down the field. My question to you is, what makes more sense, going out and drafting that kind of receiver in the first round and hoping you have the offensive line to be able to throw the football down the field, or do you go out and improve the offensive line in the first round with the idea you can still get that receiver that can stretch the field later on?
I think to follow your logic on that, which is fair, you know, their line's a little bit of a mess. Ron Leary's not coming back. You know, they want McGovern back at guard or center based on what Elway said yesterday, but there's no guarantee they get McGovern back. So you're talking about a makeover again on the offensive line. So if you take a lineman at one, you know, like a Tristan Wirfs, like a Josh Johnson, I think Jedrick Wills, the other kid, met with them as well. They're meeting with all those tackles, not surprisingly. But Wirfs I like because he could probably play guard. Some people think he'd be a better guard than a tackle. So he could start right away. It's just, Mike, they don't typically see 2 years out. Taking a tackle makes sense because I'm not sure if Juwan James and or Bowles is on the roster in 2021. They're going to decide on whether to pick up Bowles' fifth-year option. Elway said after the draft, it'd be a surprise if they accept that fifth-year option, frankly. And so you could have a situation where you need two new tackles in 2021. So that's where taking one this year would really set you up better in the future. But does that help you win and get back to the playoffs this season? And again, that's where they constantly get into this internal conflict of when now from when now on. It's usually when now. So that's why I think they'll lean toward a weapon or a defensive player, cornerback type player in the first round rather than a lineman. But again, free agency hit first, and that hits first, and that'll help clarify some of this.
Why the reluctance to pick up the fifth-year option, especially since you're not obligated to pay it? You can still cut the guy before the fifth year. The only reason you'd have to pay him is if he was hurt.
Well, I mean, it's just been the issue of play. I mean, he struggled. I mean, he's been one of the league leaders in penalties since he entered the league. I think he did make some progress into the end of last year, but as Vic said about the offensive line yesterday, and I agree, he said it's like the commercial. It's okay, and okay is just not good enough. And that's really where it was at. They did make slight improvement. But is Bowles good enough to where are you just going to be getting by for several years to come? I mean, you could argue that you could pick it up, but it's a healthy chunk. I mean, his salary, you know, basically doubles in that fifth year, and that's where that his performance versus pay really starts to matter. On a rookie contract, those first 4 years as a first rounder, if you're starting, you're a value. I mean, there's no way around it. But if you're not a Pro Bowler or in that conversation by your fifth year, that's where, Mike, you would look at and go, would we be better off paying somebody else to get better, you know, get better performance for a little more money? So that would be why. But, you know, again, Garrett made some slight progress at the end of last season. They like his reliability, but again, is reliability being available enough? And they, I don't think so looking forward, but again, these are decisions they have to make, and they're complicated, and it's complicated, frankly, by the fact that they need to get Juwan James on the field. It'd be easier to make this decision if you knew James was going to be fine, but now you have two question marks at tackle.
Based on the history here, and we were talking about it yesterday, one first rounder under John Elway's tenure signed a second contract. That's Von Miller. It's a decade has gone by where you haven't gotten a first rounder to get a second contract. Is how much pressure is on John Elway and in this particular draft?
I do think it is his most important draft. I mean, I think that's fair. And he showed humility yesterday in discussing, because I asked him, you know, do you feel like you turned the corner? Because usually at the combine, you know, he talks a big game about, hey, we're ready, you know, we're poised. And he said, hey, three straight losing seasons, 4 years without the playoffs. He used the word cautiously optimistic. That's not John Elway. He said, I'm tempering it. And these last 4 years have been sobering for Broncos country. They're just, you know, people around here aren't used to this. So this draft is huge for them. At 7-9, finishing 4-1, finishing with a winning home record, everything points, and they're going to add, it looks like, an extra playoff team. Everything, it looks like this team should be in the playoffs. So anything less than the disappointment, the playoffs is a huge disappointment. But they're not going to make it without a good draft. They're not there yet. So I agree with you, Mark. It's a huge draft for them. They can't miss those first three guys, the first three rounds, those guys have to be starters. I mean, it's not, oh, they come in, they're going to be on roster fillers. Depth is fourth through the end. And maybe you get you land a gem in there somewhere. But those first three round guys have to hit. There's no way around it. I mean, you've got to have the Justin Simmons type guy. Noah Fant last year finished strong. Like, you've got to have guys who come in and you're like, okay, that guy's going to be an impact player throughout the season, not have two good games when we're out of it. So, yeah, I agree. It's a huge draft for them.
Visitor Troy Rank. Troy, you know I love your baseball takes based on 15 years of covering the Rockies and covering Major League Baseball. I got to get your thoughts on Tom Verducci, who went in-depth into Game 5 of the 2017 World Series, Clayton Kershaw pitching in Houston, and Kershaw threw 51 sliders and curveballs that day and got zero swings and misses on them. Is that maybe one of the more damning things that have come along evidence to suggest just how much of an advantage the Astros gained that year?
Yeah, I'm sure it was just a coincidence, right? I mean, come on. It's a huge advantage. It's just, I don't know how people don't understand that at the big league level, these guys are the greatest hitters in the world. And now you give them the Cliff Notes cheat of the hack code of, hey, there's three questions coming on this test, and I'm going to eliminate basically two of them, the curveball and slider. How much easier would it be for the great hitters in the world to hit? And that's the thing. If you look at those numbers, and there's a guy online that broke all this down, but their swings and misses at home went down by double. They're not swinging at nasty pitches in the dirt. Mark knows this with his son. Like, pitchers have pitchers they throw for strikes, and the best pitchers get guys out of the strike zone on swing and miss pitches. They're designed to be in the dirt. They're not designed to be near the strike zone. Well, you can set up for that mentally and spit on that pitch. The guys like Barry Bonds did that because they're the best hitters in the world in that profession. Guys who are hitting 240 aren't supposed to be able to lay off those pitches. I think it's just patently unfair to a guy like Kershaw. And I'm not a Dodgers fan, and his legacy has been messed up for some bad playoff performances prior to that. But if they win the World Series, that changes the entire view of his career, fair or not. And that was tainted by the fact that the top 6-7 guys in their lineup knew exactly what's coming. I think if the commissioner had to do this over again, he wouldn't have spared the players punishment. But he screwed himself when he wrote that original memo, put it on the GM and the field manager. But it is awful. And here's the fallout from it. I do believe it's going to ultimately cost Jose Altuve a chance at the Hall of Fame. Because he, for me, is a Hall of Fame player. I don't think he makes it because of his involvement in the scandal.
Wow. What do you think about, real quick, and I don't know if you can retroactively go back and do this as a commissioner because you've already, You already look like a buffoon, but just stripping the World Series.
Listen, there's been movement toward that. I would be surprised because Rob Manfred doesn't want to set this precedent. He just doesn't. He's a lawyer who basically, when you do a case, you look to precedent of previous cases in the law. That's how he sees it. There's not one instance where one's been vacated. He's not one who's tempted to change history that way, but you could vacate it. In absence of punishing players, you could just say, you know, we don't recognize the title that year. Now, it doesn't change the celebration. It doesn't change the bonuses they got. It doesn't take away the parade, but it's almost like the Hall of Fame voting with guys who tested positive. It doesn't take away any of their numbers. It just, you don't get to interest into this club because of that. That's kind of what the last card he could play. I would be surprised, but he totally underestimated just the pure anger and fury from both the peers, the players' peers, and the fans. This isn't going away anytime soon. It's only going to get worse as the games count.
All right, Troy, great stuff. You can follow Troy on Twitter at Troy Rank out there in Indy at the Combine and, of course, with us three times a week. Thank you, Troy.
Yeah.
Troy Rank, our Denver 7 insider, Colorado Sportscaster of the Year. He's presented by Tranny Law.
Hey, it's Mike Evans. Siltahar Motors understands sometimes bad things happen to good people. That includes bankruptcy. If that is you, you can still purchase a car at Siltahar with zero money down in almost all cases. This is a program they've been doing for 25 years. The dealership itself is almost 60. Family-owned business that is proud of their reputation and proud to be a huge part of the Broomfield community. If you file bankruptcy, Siltahar Motors can help. Zero down and no payments for 45 days in almost all cases. Contact Team Zero Down at 720-446-9222 or online at sthmotors.com.